Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome back to Officially Unofficial, presented by Blue Wire Podcast. I'm your host, the former face of junior college baseball, the Fall American, Johnny Junta. And we are here with former Grand Canyon Antelope and Cincinnati Reds prospect, Quinn Cotton. How are we?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Happy to be here.
And before we get into this, I wanted to talk about this because, humble brag, you followed us first. You followed the podcast first. So some may say you're a fan of the show. How did you find out about us? How did this happen? What went on?
Dude, I just got my finger on the pulse of baseball Twitter, and I've come across your clips a couple times, and I was like, you know what, I gotta check them out. I gotta keep up with them.
There it is. And you know what? That means we're doing well. That means we're putting asses in seats. That's what that means. And I want to talk about Grand Canyon because this school, in my mind, is top five in the nation party wise. And let's just say in the female population wise too.
Of course.
Grand Canyon, how unbelievably awesome is it to attend maybe the best school in America?
It was a blessing, man. Like, GCU was the greatest choice for my baseball career and just like socially too. With how many, you know, minor leaguers, how many big leaguers live in Arizona. Like, being set up here, having friends here, having family here, it's been awesome. School-wise, man, you're dead on it with the girls. I ain't gonna lie about that. It's Arizona, though. It's common out here.
Do you guys have, like, rivalries? Because obviously Arizona State's there, Arizona's there. Is there certain schools that you guys despise, maybe hate, or just, like, these guys are just clowns or losers?
Yeah, New Mexico State.
Really?
Yeah, they're in our conference for everything. And baseball wise, like, we had some good rivalries with them. They got some big leaguers. They got some studs over there. And then basketball wise, it was always us and them in our conference tournament. And we finally got over the hump last year and got into the tournament. But yeah, dude, New Mexico State, I don't know what it is. I think it's the fact that Las Cruces, New Mexico is the worst place in the entire world. And when you have to go there year after year, it just wears on you, man. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
So
I have to go to Las Cruces.
So how deep did this rivalry go? Like, is it to the point where it's like, man, fuck these guys. Like, we're getting into arguments with these guys, or like, what was the extent?
So freshman year, I wasn't playing. It was Friday night, opening game of the series. It's like first or second batter up, and dude grounds out to short, and their catcher's like running to back up first base. And, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm bored. And this guy's got like, he's got like my hair, but it's bleach blonde, and he's a white dude. And it's just not a good look. And I'm like, oh, Robin Noodle head ass or something like that. And as he's walking back to go catch, he's flipping me off behind his back. And, you know, our entire dugout saw it. We were going nuts. And it was just like from pitch one, basically, it's like, all right, it's on. And wow. I don't think we swept them that series. I think we did win the series. But, man, it's like every time we played them, it's just chippy. It's rivalry, bro.
We love that baseball, though. I mean, we love chippy baseball. I'm an advocate for fighting in baseball. I think it should happen. I think it should be the new norm. No one, and I said this time and time again on the podcast. If you're a guy that holds your teammates back in fights, I fucking hate you. Like, if you, and some may call me a clown for that take, but I want to see fights. Like, I want to see guys fight on the field. The people need it. Rob Manfred needs it for ratings. Have you guys come close to like legit scrapping this team?
Not really. I think that's a college thing more than anything. Like benches clearing in college, that just really don't happen because, you know, scholarships, coaches, administration, all that. I did clear benches once so far in the minors, but it was just close to seven. But man, I got a $50 fine just to like run off the bench. So
that's so minor league.
It
paid for the it paid for the sandwiches you guys got that night.
I mean,
it did.
Oh man, I hope it went to good use.
You funded the sandwiches. You funded actually what you funded is that minor league player of the year trophy where they just get snacks. Mm-hmm. Like Taron Vavra, friend of the podcast, won minor league player of the year. And he got like, he said he got like a little plaque with like snacks attached to it. Just the biggest joke of all time. And when you're at Grand Canyon, I'm assuming, I don't have your stats in front of me. I'm assuming you just raked. So being the big guy on campus there and being the guy that like the other teams hate to face, were you like, were teams a little bit more chippy when you were at the plate or like, fuck this guy when you were hitting?
Yeah, man. I don't feel like I have like a negative persona, like on the field or anything. Like I'm not an asshole when I'm out there, but like some teams would be chirping the hell out of me or like I would punch out or something.
Yeah.
And they're like on my ass more than anybody else. And I'm like, I don't think I did anything. I think they're just mad at me for like being me, which is, I mean, I'll take that. I don't mind that at all.
And your stats, I'm pulling up right now. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, you hit 349 in your college career. So at what point during this college career were you like, listen, man, I have a chance to get drafted top 10 rounds in the draft. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of better than these guys I'm playing against. I'm putting these pitchers in body bags. Mm-hmm. Like when did you realize I'm going to get drafted? Like I'm going to be playing pro baseball. Like what age or what stage in your college career?
Dude, that had to be in Alaska, which was after my freshman year. So my freshman year, I probably got 70 at bats and I probably hit like 220, like nothing special for sure. But in this Alaska league, I went off. Like I hit like 330, which was tops in the league. And I kind of just came into my own as a hitter and like figuring out my identity.
Yeah.
And I was one of the younger kids in that league anyway, but I was like, damn, I might have a shot here. And then that kind of rolled into my sophomore year at Grand Canyon where I won WAC player of the year. And so after that, I was like, all right, man, I keep proving it, so I must be all right at this.
So, obviously, Grand Canyon's a big athletic school. Their mm-hmm. basketball team is electric to watch. I love I love betting on them because mm-hmm. of their fans.
Right.
So, when you're WAC Player of the Year at a school like Grand Canyon that's pretty much athletic-based, right, are you looked upon as the big dog on campus? Like, did you have a little swagger to you when you're walking around? Like, where people point, like, that's the WAC player of the year right there. Like, what was your persona like? Or what was, like, people looking at you as being the big dog on the baseball team at the school?
Man, the thing is, with Grand Canyon, they're so basketball-focused that it's, like, we all flew under the radar. Like, Jake Wong, who was second or third rounder with the Giants, like, he flew under the radar. He was one of our guys. And, you know, the people like who knew baseball or like knew sports knew who we were, but like I'd be in line at Chick-fil-A and like nobody's pointing me out or nothing like that. But now it's like when I go back and like I'll go hit there and, you know, go walk and get food afterwards. But now every once in a while I'll notice. But it's such a basketball school. It's like baseball was secondary to it, even though, you know, we were doing our own thing. And I thought in a lot of ways, like we're a more complete program, but
yeah, because the baseball team there is like nasty. I mean, I feel like every single year it's like you guys are at the top of the whack. Mm-hmm. And was Nick Gonzalez in that conference?
Yeah. So he was at New Mexico State.
He's so good. He's fucking good.
Yeah, man. And actually, that's another thing. Like New Mexico State, we hated them because they would play like the easiest non-conference schedule early in the season.
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, we're 4 weeks in and Nick Gonzalez has 12 homers. And for a while, we're like, okay, it's just because they're like playing the schedule. They're playing the easy schedule. And I don't think he did great. Like, he had some real good at bats against us, but he didn't like beat us by any means.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Cape Cod and hit like 350, 360. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, no, he's for real.
Dude, he's so good. Like, I've been trying to get him on the show for a while. I mean, I think we're close here, but he is unbelievable, dude. Like, yeah. And I think he just raked in the fall league too. Like, he's just so good at the game of baseball. It's just, it's sickening to see guys like that. But, and that's a funny ricochet shot because one of my really good friends, Keanu, he played at Texas Southern, and that was one of the teams on, that was one of the teams that Nick Gonzalez would play against. And, and I remember a funny graphic of Keanu, like, they lost like 49-0 or something like that to New Mexico State. Is that I heard that field's more like a launch pad though. No, is that true?
Dude, it absolutely is. I got a video of me going like completely ass out on a slider and just like flicking it, and it damn near almost goes out. Like, and I didn't hit any bombs there. I don't think I actually had a knock there. I'm not gonna lie. They got my ass when we were there. But yeah, bro, the ball just flies. And like playing outfield there is another thing because you're already playing deep as hell. And then on top of that, like you have to adjust for anything. And so I'm running into the fence like three times a game. Like we're hitting bombs, they're hitting bombs. Like it's fun playing there, but I get why, you know, their guys are popping off with like 15 bombs a year.
What I'm going to do is I have to find the score. Like I know, okay. They scored 62 runs on the weekend against them, I think it was. I'm trying to find it here.
Mississippi Valley State or something?
No, it was Texas Southern. They played Texas Southern. That's my buddy's school. And I remember we were absolutely body bagging him in our group chat because they lost like 1,000-0. I'm trying to remember. It was something like that. And Nick Gonzalez went off. They scored 62 runs in a doubleheader. Like, just what are we doing here? 62 runs. And they – like, imagine actually, like, traveling to New Mexico State, first of all, like you said, not the greatest place to visit, and giving up a 62 spot in a doubleheader.
Hey.
That's a nightmare. But
like,
so
– had some long doubleheaders, but nothing like that, man.
Yeah, 62 runs, man. It's like there has to be, like, a white flag you throw or some shit like that. Like, that's just one of the most embarrassing things of all time. So when you were raking there, I mean, obviously, I think you hit 390 your sophomore year. Are you fucking kidding me?
Dude, I was so damn close to hitting 400.
So you – okay, that's just humble, Brad. So you actually wanted to hit 400. So wait a second. What stopped you from hitting 400? Like, what happened?
So I know what happened. There was one dude that literally robbed a home run, and then there were a few other times I got some hits taken away from me. But at that point, it's like three or four hits, and you're over 400. And then my dumbass got interviewed going into my junior year, and they're like, oh, you hit 390 last year. It's like, how do you follow that up? And I was like, I'm going to hit 400. And then –
that's not good. That's a club. I mean, that's just a rival. Like, that's material that pitchers use against you. They're like, this is the guy that said he wanted to have 400. I'm gonna put him in my back pocket. You can't do that. That's that's like calling a shot. Like, that's like saying we're gonna win tomorrow, and it just gives that little bit extra motivation, you know?
Exactly. Like, I'm not sure anybody read it, but I think I just jinxed myself.
I mean, a guy like me, I was begging to hit 200 in JUCO, and you're out here calling the shots for 400. You love to see it, but
hey, man, I would kill for 330 right about now.
What was the? But I mean, obviously, the game of baseball is like shying away from average, though, right? I mean, they're looking more at the power numbers. And is that something that you're focusing on more now? Is kind of like, if I'm going to strike out a little bit more here, I'm looking at the power out, like, or what's the deal here?
See, that's such a like tricky thing as a player, especially where I'm at, because, you know, I feel like being a good hitter has what's got me to this point in my career. But at the same time, like, I've always had juice. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can go out and hit a whole lot more home runs than I do, but, you know, that's going to come at the cost of my average, my on base percentage. It's going to be more strikeouts. And, you know, subconsciously this past season, I don't know if it happened, but I hit more home runs than I ever did. And I also struck out a lot more than I ever did. So it's just kind of the way that the game's trending. And I mean, as long as, you know, I'm still hitting for power, I think I can, you know, make it work as long as I get on base enough to, you know, still be an effective and complete hitter.
I mean, you hit 10 home runs this year. I mean, that's a lot, especially in the minor league, especially in like that. I mean, you hit 10 home runs and 338 at bats, which is pretty good numbers, man. I mean, especially a guy that's like the year before you hit for average, you were 283 the year before, right? And Billings, which is, we have to talk about that city.
What the fuck?
What are we doing here? But yeah, no, I mean, 10 nukes last year, then you had 283 the year before. So, I mean, you're showing both elements of the game. Like, is this to the point where, like, regional scouts for the Reds or, like, cross-checkers are, like, talking to you? Or just what's the communication like there?
See, not me for the most part. They kind of just let me do my thing, which, you know, I appreciate because I feel like, you know, whether or not I'm going to be a major leaguer is dependent on, you know, how well I can prepare myself and, you know, how good I can make myself. So I don't want to, you know, rely on anybody else for that regardless, but, you know, they definitely like on base percentage. They like being a team that steals bases, which, you know, is something I do. But at some point it's like, you know, you can't strike out so much. You got to get on base because you're a threat once you're on the base path. So
yeah.
That's my own, you know, balance that I have to figure out for myself.
And I'm looking at the high school you went here, and that high school looks really familiar. Is that one of the powerhouses?
Absolutely.
Like, okay, because like I was going to say, when I see that name, I think of just ESPN high school football game of just like Spencer, and obviously not Spencer Rattler, but like Spencer Rattler facing this school. So is that a private school, I'm assuming?
It is. We weren't so much football. We were real good at basketball. We had Josh Perkins, who played at Gonzaga. And then baseball wise, you had David Peterson, who's with the Mets, Max George, who's with the Rockies, Reagan Todd with the Rockies. Those two are going to be big leaguers soon. We were legit. It was a big sports high school. You know, that's what we were known for, but it was Catholic. It was, you know, a lot of good stuff.
Is it all boys? Was it an all boys school?
Absolutely. Well,
nightmare fuel. Can't do it.
It's not that bad. Like, there's a boys division. There's a girls division.
Oh, okay. So you see girls. You see girls, though, right?
Lunch in like this little field in the middle of the schools, and you get to like hang out and socialize with women for like 30 minutes. Then you got to go back with the dudes and go.
Okay.
Learn.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not like in my mind where it's like literally like an army academy where it's just guys. Like that's what I had in my mind. But wait a second though. You're from Cali, so. Did that school
that's a technicality. I was born there but lived there for like 6 months.
Okay, so you're from Colorado. You live you grew up in Colorado. Okay, because I was gonna say, like, did this school like recruit you kind of like a IMG Academy situation?
Yeah, that would be something to get recruited to Colorado.
Yeah, no, well, Colorado, I went to school in Nebraska, which is McCook, Nebraska, which is like pretty close to Colorado. I mean, it's like a 3-hour drive. We used to go there almost every weekend, just get absolutely mangled. But yeah, I love Colorado. You want to talk about one of the most underrated states of all time? Holy shit, that place is absolutely electric. But you get drafted by the Rockies out of high school and you just said, fuck no. What's going on with that? Like, what happened there?
So high school, like, I didn't think I was gonna get drafted. Like, I was having enough of a tough time, like, getting recruited in the first place. Like, I wasn't really thinking about the draft. And my parents wanted me to get my degree. Like, I wanted to get my degree. I didn't want to have to go back.
Yeah.
And so whatever teams would talk to me before, you know, the high school draft, I was like asking for $1 million. I was like, if I'm going to get drafted now, I'm just going to get paid. And I played on this Rocky scout team and they just kind of took me as a courtesy pick. And then, and that's the end of the story. There's nothing else.
Yeah. But how did you have troubles getting like, recruited if you're getting drafted out of high school? I mean, how does that make sense? Like, was there, like, how many schools were talking to you?
A lot of schools were talking to me, but nobody was like making me offers. Like, okay. I was like a middle child of too good for like the D2s and the JUCO,
yeah,
and then like not good enough for like the power five D1s. And so like I had West Virginia make me an offer, but
why didn't you go there? Alec Manoah.
Right? That's another thing. I played with Sam Kessler, who also went to West Virginia. He's with the Tigers right now. That team was so good. And, like, everybody I've met from that West Virginia team is awesome. And I'm like, man, you know, I didn't even really consider it in high school because I'm like, West Virginia, man, I that's not the place for me. But dude, that could have been real fun.
Dude, like, especially the development there, you get to like face off against in the fall. You get to face like Alek Manoah and shit. Like, that team was insane, man.
Dude, I faced Manoah in Cape Cod, and I never want to do it again.
Dude, that's definitely a type of guy where you see in like, I mean, you see in like high school or you see in like universities, like, this guy's going to be in the show for a very long period of time.
Yeah, I honestly think that that's the first moment where I was like, goddamn, I'm overmatched right now.
Yeah.
And this guy is tapped into something that I'm not on yet. Like, I'm not on this dude's level.
Well, it's just like, I always say this, it's like, it's easier to be a pitcher and be more elite than it is to be a hitter, right? I mean,
so much easier, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely easier. But I mean, the Cape Cod League, you also get reality checks like where I should be if I want to be a first rounder, where I should be. I think you hit 286 in the Cape Cod League, right? So, I mean, you held your own there. Was that like another point for you where you're like, all right, man, like I'm pretty good at this game of baseball here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of learning that summer. Like, I came off the WAC Player of the Year. And I was like in the running for Team USA, the college national team.
Yeah.
And I was like an alternate or something like that. So I'm going to Cape Cod. And on one hand, it's like, I'm coming from a school that nobody's heard of, but like, I also might be leaving in a couple of weeks to go to fucking Team USA. Like, that would be.
Yeah.
And I like balled out for the first like month. And I'm like waiting on my Team USA call, never shows up. And I checked like halfway through the season, I'm hitting like 350. And then it was like all downhill from there.
That's baseball, though.
Exactly. No, it totally is. It's like you have one half of the season, your lights out, like everything's clicking. And then the second half, you know, you got to struggle and you got to figure it out. And, you know, when you're sitting there facing Alek Manoah, that's tough.
So how close were you to being on the Team USA team? Like, what happened there?
I'll never like actually know. They never spoke to me. I was like leaving Grand Canyon after my exit meeting, after our conference tournament was over, and my coach was like, hey, do you have a passport? And I was like, no. He's like, well, you need to get one because Team USA might call you up and you might have to go to like Cuba. I don't know, even know where the games were, but I'm playing like the first couple weeks in Cape Cod against Andrew Vaughn.
Holy shit.
And I got a picture of like a pitching change and I'm on second base and I'm sitting there talking with all these dudes. And then like a week later, they're gone on Team USA. And like, I still haven't heard anything. And so I just kind of gave up on it, figured they weren't going to call. And, you know, obviously they didn't, but it was cool, man. It was like playing against those dudes. Andrew Vaughn, that's another guy who just like made his debut. And it's like, damn, I played against him like 2 years ago. It's weird.
He's so good. He's so good too. Holy shit.
Exactly. It's like, God, he's just a really good hitter.
Yeah, and going into that junior year, obviously, where you rake, you get drafted eighth round by the Reds. Was that where you were, like, projected to go, or was it earlier? Because obviously you're coming off a WAC Player of the Year, and maybe that's not a conference that's that respected by scouts. But Nick Gonzalez, I mean, he went first round, right? So it's definitely respected by a lot of scouts and all that kind of stuff, I guess, contradicting myself. But was that where you were expecting to go? Because your numbers, like I said, video game numbers in your college career, right?
I mean, I was obviously hoping to go higher, and from what I had heard, that's, you know, what I was expecting, like fourth or fifth round, hopefully.
Yeah.
But like, as the day went on, it was just like the teams I was expecting to hear from weren't calling, and then teams that I hadn't heard from were just popping up. And, you know, you think you'd have a plan and, you know, you hear about projections and you think you might have an idea of where you might go, but like, once the actual draft starts, like, all that stuff just goes out the window.
Yeah, everything changes. Every single thing changes. Most guys get drafted by teams that they didn't even knew they existed. Yeah. Like, that's just how it's like. The game of baseball is so fucking crazy. But some people might look at that eighth round draft pick and be like, okay, like, whatever. But, dude, that is for the MLB draft, that is a high pick.
Dude, because I know.
There's like 45 rounds, right? Yeah. You're going eighth round in the draft. You're the eighth guy they picked.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when you got drafted, obviously, and maybe you were like, all right, I want to go fourth, fifth round. Everyone wants to go higher or whatever, but you still have the dream of getting drafted. What was that moment like for you to be like, holy shit, like, this is a guy that wasn't really recruited out of high school, picked as a courtesy pick for the Rockies because he was on the scout team, and now you're going eighth round, very high in the major league draft. Like, what was that reality like for you?
I think it's just like how much it says about going to college and like getting a ton of at bats and, you know, working with great coaches, playing great competition during the summer, like I said, in Alaska and then Cape Cod. And like actually developing and putting the time in as a player. You know, I was good in high school because like I was athletic and, you know, it's high school baseball in Colorado. It's not the most difficult thing in the world.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I had gone and, you know, signed with somebody out of high school, I probably would have been, you know, out of baseball in 3 or 4 years, honestly. Yeah. And like actually having, you know, the confidence that I had when I did get drafted, I was like, okay, you know, this is what's next for me. You know, this is the next step in my progression as a player, as opposed to college or in high school, it felt like, you know, God, I'm probably not ready for this. And I feel like GCU was huge for me. Like that ended up being the best decision for me.
And you see it both ways, right? I mean, you see guys that get drafted out of high school and they pick to go to school and their draft stock plummets. And you see guys like you, where you get drafted in the 36th or 38th round, one of those rounds in the draft, and you develop in school, you make a name for yourself, you play in the Cape Cod League, you do well there. Mm-hmm. And that you're jumping 28 rounds in the draft. That's a massive, massive signing, but like you invest in yourself and you have, you like potentially can get a degree or whatever, you're 1 year away from it or anything like that. So it's like, there's two ways to look at it, but what would you tell to like a high school kid that's kind of on the brink right now that like sees the money that they're getting? Like, it's like, listen, $250,000 signing bonus to not get a full ride at a university or not go to school. Like, what would you tell a guy in that situation right now?
I would say, you know, obviously it worked out for me, you know, investing in myself and basically proving the player that I am. And then on top of that, with NIL and stuff like that in college right now, which I got absolutely screwed by the fact that I didn't have that. Like, college is such a great option right now. But at the same time, I mean, if a team is going to financially invest in you and you feel like you're equipped for it, I mean, I think getting a jump on your pro career, like, that's huge too. It really just depends on what you need as a player. Like, that's truthfully what it comes down to more than anything.
And was your high school team like one of those teams that was playing, like, had McDonald's All-Americans and had like ESPN was at your school, like for games, shit like that? Or your team was on ESPN for basketball?
We played, I think they did do a couple games on ESPN for basketball. We did a couple national tournaments. I actually played against Cole Tucker while we were both in high school in North Carolina. And like, I was a sophomore, he's a senior, and they were just talking about the dude, like everybody was, and he just went off that game. I think we ended up winning. But I actually work out at the same spot as him. So I brought it up the other day and he was like, oh shit, you know, I do remember that. It was crazy. But yeah, man, you know, like I said, high school baseball in Colorado is not the greatest competition of all time, but you know, when you're playing those national tournaments, like, you see guys who are going to be big leaguers. Like, Tukey Toussaint was in that tournament. Isaiah Gilliam, I forgot who he's with, but yeah, dude, there's a ton of legit guys that we played.
So you're training with Cole Tucker right now and his brother.
I don't think Carson's been in there. I think he's rehabbing right now. But yeah, Cole works out in the early group. I'm right after him. Yeah, bro, there's a lot of big leaguers,
Who's in that group with you?
With me, it's Corey Abbott with the Cubs, Tyson Miller with the Rangers, and Giles.
like 100 mile Giles, like
100 miles Giles. Like, and I didn't realize it was him for like 3 days.
That's a Toronto legend. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's just like a goofy dude. And I'm like, God, why do they keep calling this guy Ken? And finally, I asked my trainer, I was like, hey, bro, is that Ken Giles? He's like, yeah. I'm like,
so what? You're training with the 100 Mile Giles, Toronto Blue Jays legend.
Legend.
A guy that I legit
World Series champion.
Yeah, World Series champion. And you had no idea. So is that is that one of the big guys in that group with you?
Yeah. So my group's only about 4 or 5 people. Who else is in our group?
So who's in like the first? Who's in the first group? Like that early group with Cole Tucker.
The cool people. Pat Murphy, DJ Johnson, Greg
Jamie?
Allen.
Is Jamie in there? Jamie Westbrook?
I haven't seen Jamie in a minute. Actually, I saw Jamie a couple weeks ago. I don't know where Jamie's working out at.
Yeah.
Yancy Almonte's in that group. Justice Sheffield. I'm forgetting people, man.
That's a massive facility. Is that like one of the big facilities in AZ or what?
Yeah, it's called Fisher Institute. It's a spot, bro. Like, I'm going to be so good next year. I'm going to be so flexible.
So how I always wonder that in the minor, like when you're like a pro baseball player in the off season, how do you approach that? Like, does your agent reach out to that, like that company, or how does it go?
It's kind of whatever you want. Like, some teams want you to work out at their spot at their complex, so like they can keep an eye on you. And for some teams, it's like, hey, that's an option if you don't want to go do your own thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's on your own. And then my agent, you know, recommended Fisher because he's like, hey man, we've sent people there before and they loved it. And you know, they did good work there. And I'm like, yeah, bro, why not?
So you're going to ball out next year.
That's the plan, I hope.
So yeah. I mean, you hit 10 nukes last year. So, I mean, you balled out this year. It's a little bit. It's going to come, man. I mean, right. So what was like the biggest difference that you noticed in the minor league so far? Because obviously you don't really have that option to be like, there's not like a team aspect, right? Like, you're not like playing for each other like you are in college where it's like, listen, let's go win a conference. Let's go win a natty. Like, everyone's kind of, there's still that team element, but everyone's like, I'm for myself here. You know what I mean? Like, what's the biggest difference you notice?
You know, it's not as like individualistic as people might think. Like, I will say the very last game of the season, our catcher was trying to get above 200 and he was at 199 and I was up right before him, like last at bat, last game of the season, two outs. And I'm like, damn, bro, I got to get a knock right here. I got to get on base so my boy can get over 200. And sure enough, I got a knock. And then right after, he gets like a little through the four hole, he hits 201 and like our dugout's going crazy. Like, it's stuff like that, you know, reemphasizes that it's still a team game. It's like, if you invest in your teammates, if you invest in the team, and like, it'll work out for you. You know, a lot of pitchers, a lot of position players will, you know, kind of clash and go back and forth about, you know, different stuff, which we had a little bit this year with the sticky stuff, which I'm sure every team was dealing with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of learn, like, it is an individual sport, but at the same time, you know, there are going to be guys who are going to be in people's weddings. They're going to be, you know, friends for life. So if you kind of treat it like it's you against the world, it'll kind of end up that way. But, you know, if you invest in people, I figure out it'll, you know, be the best way to go about it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So what was it like in high A last year? I mean, what was the pitching like, or what was like the facilities you like? I mean, obviously it's high A, so some of the facilities are not top notch, to say the least. I mean, we roast a lot of the minor league facilities on this podcast. So what was your time like in high A last year? Because obviously, I mean, a lot of at bats, you got a lot of work in last year, and you got to like learn, like you said, you got to learn a lot about your game and develop and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely, I mean, it's good to be playing baseball again for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. High A was about what I expected. More consistent pitching across the board, you know, guys who have multiple breaking pitches and can command the zone a lot better. And then another thing I kind of didn't realize is how good the defenses would be, which, you know, it makes sense, you know, the higher you climb, and especially once you get to the majors, like the reason a lot of people aren't hitting 300 anymore is because how good the defenders are, not just the pitching. Like, I was losing hits all over the place. Like, I had one against the Cubs. I hit like 110 off the bat, like straight back up the middle. And their shortstop, his name's Delvin Zinn, he stole like 40 bags, at least 40 bags this year. And he just like slides, spins around, throws me out by like three steps. Like, it's nothing. I can't tell you how many hits I lost this year. And I'm like, I'm looking at my average and I'm like, I'm not a bad hitter. Like, I can't be doing this bad, right? But it's like, damn, I'm losing a lot of hits out here. It's tough.
Well, man. I mean, what a lot of the scouts look at now is like OPS and OBP, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like one of the biggest things, which is these stat nerds that fucking are taking over the game of baseball. So, but one thing that really stands out to me is you had 24 fucking stolen bases last year. I mean, what the, are you getting the steal sign every time you touch a fucking base, or what's the deal?
I was just running. Like, they told us this year, if you can steal, just do it. And that's the perfect way to like learn your limit as a base stealer. So if you look on their like billings, I stole 8 bags and got thrown out 8 times. Like, that's not enough volume, and it's like a way too low of a percentage of success. And so this year I'm like, I'm going to pick my spots better. I'm going to learn, you know, when I should go instead of just like taking off and thinking that I can just straight up beat the catcher in a race. And like this year, I would just pick up on the pitcher. And I'm like, if this guy is slow to the plate at all, I'm just going to go. Like, I don't really care who's behind the plate. And that's kind of just what I did. Like, I'd get on base and, or, you know, I'd be in the dugout watching the guy. And if I picked up on a tendency, and, you know, I'm not going to wait around, I'm just going to go.
Yeah. You know what? That's the good thing about the minors is like, if they, you kind of have free will to kind of do what you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to steal a base, fucking steal a base. Like, they're not going to stop you from that. Did you lead the organization in stolen bases last year, or like, were you up there with it?
Dude, there were two guys on our team that beat me in stolen bases.
Holy shit. Really? Yeah. How many they have? Like 30, 35?
One guy had, I want to say 42.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He had like 42. And then the other dude had about 30.
And I have to talk about this, because on one of my trips for junior college, we would drive 16 hours to play in Montana, which is the dumbest fucking thing of all time, going from Nebraska to Montana. And this area we played at, I thought I was on fucking Mars. Obviously I'm from Toronto, so it's just like completely different, right? Like, completely different lifestyles down there. What was it like playing in Montana? Because you're literally on like a deserted island pretty much with nothing to do. Like, there's literally nothing to do.
You know, Billings, where I was at, was awesome. Like, if I was anywhere else, I probably would have hated it.
Yeah.
But Billings is actually a lot like Denver, just a bit smaller. Great people, great ballpark. We had real good facilities there. But man, whenever we go on the road, we were in Great Falls, Idaho.
Oh my God.
Great Falls, Montana, which is where the White Sox affiliate used to be.
Yeah.
And like, they had one batting cage with just a ton of holes in it. Like, there's holes in the screen. Like, our hitting coach got hit probably 3 times and just said, fuck it, I'm done. And just like, and God, where did we stay at? We stayed at a Days Inn when we were in Great Falls. And there's a Safeway like a mile down the road. There's an Arby's like in the parking lot. And then there's like limited stuff on DoorDash. So it's just slim pickings, man. It was tough out there. We played in Idaho Falls in Idaho, which was not much better. I love the fact that, you know, these places, you know, get to watch live baseball at a real good level. But at the same time, it's like, man, what are we doing?
No, I feel that, man. Like, do you have any fucked up minor league stories, like funny minor league stories from your career with like fans or just facilities or hotels you stayed at or just fucked up things in general?
Yeah, dude, I got a lot.
give me your funniest story. I'll clip it, put it on Twitter. Let's get this shit popping. Give me your funniest story, because we've had funny ass stories on this podcast, as you can see. But Mona Lisa funny story?
So we're at home in Dayton. It's late in the season. Like, everybody's getting ready to, you know, pack it up and go home. And this dude in the outfield keeps yelling at me. And he's like, hey, Cotton, you bring me some bubble gum, I'll give you a beer. And people will, like, suggest this all the time. Like, hey, if you give me a baseball, I'll give you a beer. And I always give them a ball, like, hoping maybe. And they never do. And I don't know how I'd actually like get the beer off the field, but I bring like a ton of bubble gum out to this dude. And I'm running it out there like in between innings, like right as the catcher's throwing down. And I'm like trying to throw this bubble gum up out of my glove. And he's trying to catch it, and he's like dropping half of it back onto the field. And I'm like, oh shit, like the game's about to start. Like, I got to go. And this dude like leaves a cup of beer on the rail of the outfield. Like, he was true to his word, actually did it. And like the game ended, and I kind of noticed it, but I'm like, you know what? I can't be drinking like stranger's beer. And like, that's not a good visual either, but the dude actually did it. So I'm really impressed.
That's electric. That is a great story, because you get those fans that just want the baseball, and they'll just pretend they'll do whatever that fucking takes for it. That guy put his balls on the table, and that guy actually pulled through. So credit to that guy, man. Yeah. That's good for that dude.
Spent a whole $10 just on a fence.
I mean, so bubblegum. And who was a couple of big like prospects you played with in your so far in like your minor league career, like top five, like in the system, or just top 10 guys? Like,
man, we had Nick Lodolo when we were in Dayton. And he's just the greatest dude.
Futures game. He was in the futures game.
Yeah, he was. So I love watching him pitch. And I was playing center field in Billings, and like, I just watched his ball just so much fun to watch. And like, I don't think he walked anybody for the first like 50 or 60 innings. It might be
more. Oh my God.
A long time without walking like anybody. Let's see, who else we got? We had Ivan Johnson and Mike Ciani. I think they're both in the top 10. Those two, I ended up living with them in Dayton for the second half of the season. And they're huge soccer fans. And so I got into like the English Premier League.
Oh, you're EPL guy.
Dude, I'm getting into it, and like, I'd be forgetting the Chelsea. I picked Chelsea for some reason.
Okay, you're a Chelsea guy. No, I respect that.
The people that just won, you know, the Champions League, I'm a bit of a bandwagon. But I'll be forgetting that they have games. Like, I'll hop on Instagram in the morning. It's like, oh, Chelsea just drew with Watford. And I'm like, what the? We had a goddamn game today.
No, dude. So Nick Lodolo is one of those guys. I mean, he's going to be a big leaguer for a really long time. I mean, this guy's a freak of nature. And one of our guys, friends of the show, that is from Arizona, maybe you know him, Futures Game MVP, Brennan Davis.
Oh, right? I know Brennan very well.
That's my guy. I mean, that's my guy right there. Yeah. How good is he? He's so fucking good.
Well, I was going to bring him up right after I brought up the other guys, because that's my boy and I got to plug him anyway. But he was up in South Bend for like the last two or three days of a series, and I think we got him out like twice. And he had like four walks, like two homers, a double. He just showed up, hopped off the plane, started raking, like went up to double A, raked there, went to the futures game, raked there, went to triple A, raked there. It's just, we keep talking about people who can just fucking hit. He's another one of them.
Yeah. It's just some guys that just, they wake up, they don't need any BP, and it's just straight absolute rake city. You'd love to see it. Especially, he's such a good guy too.
Like, yeah, especially one of my friends. I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah. He's such a good guy. So, I mean, playing in the minors and all this kind of stuff, do you have any like rivalries maybe with a couple other guys in the organizations, or did your team, I mean, so obviously, like I said, tensions get high sometimes. You're playing in the dog days of summer. You're God knows wherever the fuck you are. Was there close instances where it's like, listen, man, I might come fisticuffs with this dude? Like, did you have any instances like that? Or was there a rivalry with you and someone?
You know, I did have like an accidental rivalry one time in Montana. Like, there are four teams in that league, so you get to know the other teams pretty well. And one of their guys was walking over and hitting BP, and he's like, hey, check out this bat. Gives me a bat. I swing a little bit. I like it. He's like, hey, you want to trade? I'm like, yeah. So I, you know, throw him one of my bats, go out there, first step out of the game, and hit a bomb with this dude's bat. So, you know, jog around the bases. I touch home plate, and I like, he's DH'ing that day. So he's sitting in the dugout, and I kind of like point at him. Go back to the dugout like nothing happened. A couple of bats later, I get up there, and it's just this dude who's throwing like 95 and just does not know where it's going. And he like buzzes the tower on the first one. I'm like, damn. I get back in there, and then he drills me in the hip, and like, I go to first, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I get back in the dugout, and my manager is like, now you know. And I'm like, now I know what. And he's like, you can't show up the other team. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, when you hit that home run, you put it in their dugout. I was like, did I just get hit on purpose? He's like, yeah, they just drilled you for doing that. I was like, oh no, I was just pointing at my boy. He's like, oh. So like, nobody actually knew what was going on. Like, I think these dudes were like ready to fight, and I had no clue. So I just wore it, went to first like nothing.
So did that guy at least stand up for you, or he just like, yeah, hit this fucking guy? Like, what happened?
Dude, I don't know. Like, I didn't really get a chance to talk to him about it again, but I kind of just forgot about it. I was like, shit, man, I'll take the help on my own base percentage.
That's incredible. You got beamed on purpose and you had no idea. Like, no. That doesn't even make sense. That is incredible. Good for you.
Yeah, man. I don't think I've made any enemies this season.
That's the minors, man.
Some of the umpires, bro.
Yeah, how bad are the umpires in the minors?
Man, some of them, first of all, they're doing their best. Like, I know they're doing their best. And I know that they're learning. But it's like sometimes you're, like, influencing people's paychecks. And you just got to be better sometimes. Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing is sometimes the way that they'll, like, talk about it or talk about themselves. Like, there were a couple times where I had the day off and I'd go coach first base. You know, I'm trying to be sociable and talk to the, you know, the field umpire. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I have the highest called correct strike rate in the minor leagues. And I'm like, I know for a fact that you don't.
True.
Up. And actually, I mean, that's kind of cool that they, you know, do rate them and, you know, actually keep them accountable to some degree. But it's weird, bro. And there's sometimes, like, being a competitor and, like, you kind of cross the line and then – like, you see the dude at Buffalo Wild Wings the next day. It's, like, a little bit awkward. We're staying in the same hotels that we are.
Yeah.
Like, we see these umpires, like, all the time. It's kind of funny.
I think there needs to be more accountability, though, in, like, especially major leagues. You have guys like fucking Angel Hernandez, like, still calling balls and strikes. Like, there needs to be more accountability. There needs to be some sort of aspect where guys are getting called up or sent down because, like, Angel Hernandez could have, like, a 30% correction strikeout rate one game. And he'll never get sent down to the minors. He'll never lose a paycheck. But if one of you guys strike out a shit ton or just don't succeed in the majors, your ass is down there in a second. Why aren't they held accountable like the players? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, honestly. Although one thing that, you know, I think people don't necessarily realize, you know, umpires weren't a big issue for me in, like, high school or college because, like, if somebody steals a strike on you, it's probably okay. But now it's like, hey, man, I only get 3 strikes and, like, I'm trying to make the most of all of them. So you got to be tight back there because the dude on the mound is, you know, not slipping up very much.
Who's one guy you played this year or you face in the box where it's like, this guy's going to be the potential Hall of, like, this guy's the best pitcher I've ever seen?
I would say, I think his name's Jerson Ramirez with the Indians. We just called him Slider Guy because he threw his slider, like, 70% of the time.
Jesus.
And, you know, because it worked. Like, I feel like I don't need to say any more than that. It was like 3,000 spin rate or something like that. And the first time he pitched against us, he diced everybody. And then the next day he's in the outfield running poles, like, barefoot while we're hitting BP. And our pitchers are like, hey, how do you throw that? And he's like, oh, I just, like, walk around and do this all day.
What?
I don't know. The dude is different. He's different.
Pitchers are different. And we're talking about, man, we're talking about umpires, though. And you could be honest here because, like I said, you stole a lot of bases last year. Was there a couple close calls where you got called safe but you were out? Be honest.
There are some times I got picked off when they called me safe. I will say that. I got away with a few.
Really?
Yeah, I'm good at selling it, but – there were a couple of times at second base where, like, I had to do a little, you know
swim
what I mean?
Move. Yeah, a little swim move.
And your eyes just, like, can't process how quick I'm moving. So it's not their fault. We don't have instant replay yet. I won't blame them.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
What was your Mona Lisa game of the year this year? Like, what was your game of the year? Like, did you ever go, like, 4-for-4 with, like, 2 doubles, a bomb?
I had a good one. We're in Lake County, Ohio.
Facing the Indians, minor league team.
And Lake County, Ohio is only second to Las Cruces, New Mexico, in terms of quality.
Yeah.
And I was, like, 0-for on the series going into Friday. And I go 0-for-3 my first at-bats Friday. And I get, like, a little ass-out double on my last at-bat. And I'm like, all right, I got a hit in the series. We go into Saturday. I'm hitting, like, 6th or 7th. Like, I'm down in the lineup. Like, I'm down bad, bro. And
first at bats, like runner on second, I just fight my ass off, 3-2 count, and I like spoil a slider, slap it in the gap for a little RBI single. Second at bat, another RBI single, like a laser to left center. And I'm 2-for-2. And what did I do? Oh, I'm 2-for-2, and I go down 0-2 my third at bat. And I go oppo tank to right field, and I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, you know, it's happening. Like, today's the day. So I'm 3-for-3. I got 4 RBIs. I got a bomb. I'm going up for my fourth at bat, and they make a pitching change. They bring in this lefty. And I fucking tee off this dude. First pitch he throws. Another bomb, 4-for-4. And I come in and like step on home plate. I go back to the dugout and something possessed me. I'm like, welcome to the game, bitch. And I said that to my dugout. And there was one kid who repeated that to me for the rest of the season.
Dude, it's just something takes over you, man. When you're buzzing like that, when you're feeling yourself, yeah. you don't know what happens there, man. It's just you blank. And I respect the hell out of that. Like, I'd be the caucus dude of all time. So, and then the second last thing I want to talk about here is obviously, like I said, you're coming up in the system. You keep going level to level here. Have guys like talked to you or prepared you for like what it's like in double A, like pitching wise? Because they say double A is the hardest one. Like they say, like if you make it through double A, that's where the pitchers are. Where it's like skill actually meets like raw talent with the pitchers, right? Like where they actually are like kind of developed. So have guys like talked to you about that level?
You know, most of the stuff I've heard has been like, hey man, double A is not that bad. So now I'm like getting conflicting information. So I don't know how to feel about this, but I feel like more guys are throwing strikes and they can actually execute their pitches. And so I think it'll be better. Like the way that my swing is geared and the way that like my approach is geared. But I've definitely had a lot of people saying, you know, at this level, you should expect this. And like, I've had pitchers, one of my best friends, Braxton Roxby, who got called up to double A about halfway through the season and then got sent back down and was like, hey dude, like this is the stuff that I have to work on. And like, this is what you should start to work on for when you get up there. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no, dude, the Reds, they're kind of slow with, like, guys coming up. We had Jonathan India on the podcast. That guy's, I mean, you want to talk about guys that are nasty at the game of baseball. Holy shit, that guy, I mean, rookie of the year is that good. So, oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's just the Reds actually, they're kind of slow with calling guys up, but they're actually not at the same time. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, so is that your goal next year is to, like, make it up, like, obviously make it through double A, maybe get, like, that late season call to triple A, or is it, like, triple A next year? Like, what's your goal?
You know, I kind of don't think that far ahead. I figure if I play how I should play, it'll take care of itself, honestly. And I know that's, like, a cliche answer, but – you know, if I say, oh, well, I got to go to double A this year, you know, maybe like I'm setting my sights too low, or maybe, oh, I want to make it to triple A this year. Maybe that's unrealistic, but I'm kind of just like focused on playing my game.
So and what? That's a great answer. What are you working? Like, what are you working on specifically? Like I said, you said, I guess that like that strikeout rate bringing down, but I mean, with the stolen base percentage you have, especially last year and the amount of home runs you hit, it's like you get the best of both worlds where it's speed meeting power. But what's one specific thing? Like, are you changing like something in your swing or your approach maybe next year? Like, what do you like pregame routine? What are you like changing?
I'd say swing wise, mechanically, I'm not trying to change anything. I'm more or less like working on my mobility and my strength as a way to improve my swing where it's at, like generate more force and be able to, you know, use my body more efficiently to be a better hitter. And doing that is going to help my power. It's going to help, you know, my contact rate, my hard hit rate. And, you know, on top of that, the other element is plate discipline. And the Reds were nice enough to give us these virtual reality headsets with Win Reality, that software. You just throw it on and you can take live at bats against like any big leaguer.
Yeah.
And so it's like a mix of pitches, fastball, sliders, and then you do different drills with, you know, pitch recognition.
Wow.
Balls and strikes. Like, it's a ton of stuff. And so I'm trying to lay it out for myself where it's like, you know, if I improve my plate discipline, I'll get more pitches to hit. And when, you know, I improve my strength, I'll do more with those pitches to hit. So it's like, it's all right there. It's just a matter of putting it together. But, you know, on top of that, like I'm working with weighted baseballs,
a lot of arm care to try and improve my throwing arm. You know, improving defense is another thing. Like once January starts up again and GCU starts practicing, like I'll be out there probably 4 days a week, just like shagging BP, just, you know, getting reads. So it, really every aspect of my game, like I want to be a five tool player. And so I have to work on every aspect of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so wait, with the virtual reality, is that something like you do every single day? Like you'll get live at bats just to like, cause how does that work? Like, how do you know you're actually taking good pitches? Like it's cause it's.
So I don't do it like every day. I try to do it a couple times a week, but you have the headset on and it's basically you're standing in the box and they can put whoever out on the mound and you watch the pitch come in and you have a strike zone in front of you and you have a little remote. Basically, if it's a strike, you click the trigger. If it's a ball, you don't. And then you can set it to, okay, I'm only going to click the trigger on fastballs and not breaking balls. And it'll give you feedback in real time, basically saying
if you're clicking it on fastballs.
Right. And then it'll show you like within the zone. It's like, this is where this pitch came in. And it'll say, you know, this is the velocity. And this was, it's pretty cool stuff, man. A lot of teams are getting into it, but you know, the fact that they sent us into the off season with, you know, the equipment to like prepare ourselves for next year is fucking awesome.
So like, could you see it potential like working, like could you see like does it translate to real life
or? You know, some aspects of it absolutely. I think with like zone discipline for sure.
Yeah,
what I do have an issue with is pitch recognition. Like a literal baseball, you can see the seams.
Yeah,
with this, you know, it's a little bit different. You can get a little bit of the arc, but if you're trying to read seams, you can't exactly do that. Or maybe I just need glasses. I don't know.
We'll see. I don't know. But
I feel like every team uses it.
I'm fascinated with that. That's weird.
That's good stuff.
It's just, I feel like it would like fuck me up because I would be so used to seeing like a virtual reality kind of pitch and all that kind of stuff that when I'd get to a game, I'd be like absolutely clueless. Like me, for instance.
You know what I mean? Dude, you got to try it somehow. There's got to be, if you have an Oculus or something like that, you got to find a way to try it. It's so cool.
Really? No, it looks cool. It sounds cool, man. I mean, yeah, that's fucking crazy, man. If you showed that to fucking fraud boy Babe Ruth, he'd be beside himself if he saw
it. I know. He would have no chance. Yeah, I'm just going to say that. Adam Ottavino would strike out Babe Ruth.
Facts. I mean, like a high-level Division I junior college player would strike out Babe Ruth. So, yeah, it's just he's never seen it before, but that's fine. But anyways, man, like I said, dude, obviously I'm fired up to see what you do next year. Obviously, man, the Reds, like I said with India, I mean, India was in the show. He barely played AAA, or I think he went from AA to AAA. So they're not scared to fly guys through the system if you have success. I'm fired up to see what you do, man. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. You're electric. And maybe GCU, hit me up. Let's get something going here. Maybe a potential first pitch or something. Maybe send me some gear. We'll figure something out.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, my man.
Thank you for listening to Officially Unofficial. Make sure you guys subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Fish on a Fish Pod and on Instagram at Officially Unofficial Pod. Thank you.